Hi, I'm Josh, and look, you can't just expect to walk in and get hired as a clown in a cornfield. Like, you're gonna have to start as like a mime in a soy field. And then if you do good enough at that, you might get upgraded to like a mascot in an alfalfa field, but you're not just gonna walk right into clown.
Hi, this is Matt answering Mr. Harrigan's phone, and I'll be back next week with a different movie to talk about poorly with an ill-thought-out intro.
Breaking the sixth wall.
So many walls!
Let's see. I was trying to... Darn it. My brain, it was almost there. I was trying to think of something to do with, like, this... When you process milk, and then there's, like, the stuff after the... It's been curdled and strained, and I was like, like whey buns. But I was like, I was trying to figure out a way to do that. I could not come up with anything clever. So just think of the product of milk processing and then the one of the movies, and then you've got yourself a joke. It's a do yourself joke.
And more, much more than this, we did it our way, and this is our show hot dog.
Excellent. Well done.
So first up this week, we have a short called Cubicle or Cubiculo, who knows, El Baño, perhaps. This is a story all about how a woman walks into a bathroom and sits down and takes a pregnancy test and it doesn't go well. And then she hears what sounds like sex in the stall next to her, and then what is clearly murder in the stall next to her. And then things get a little weird, and then she's the murder victim. And I don't know. It's quick. It's cool. I'm still not sure why the pregnancy test needed to happen, but it's otherwise, yeah.
What'd you think there, Charlie?
Yeah, I'm about halfway through this, I'm like, oh yeah, this is the one with the monster baby. So I was like, how many ones I've seen in like bathroom stalls, you know, where it's like,
it's become a weird thief. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there's a bunch of them. And I was like, which one is this one? I'm like, I don't. I was like, oh, yeah, Monster Baby. Like, okay. So, I mean, I guess it's like a thinly veiled metaphor for like the.
Well, she's having an unplanned pregnancy and therefore her life is over.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, that's pretty tabby, slot B. But the monster looks kind of weird, and up until the ending part you kind of like, what is happening exactly? And so it also remind you of like how, because I mean presumably this is set somewhere outside of the United States,
and it's the toilet had a lid, so clearly not in the United States.
Well, that and the fact that the damn stall doors go down to the fucking floor where they're supposed to be. They'll play a game of peekaboo with random passersby.
No side gaps, but still a bottom gap because she takes a picture under it.
Yeah, it's enough for a foot to be under there, but it's, you know,
in case you what if you run out of toilet paper? You need to be able to like pass a roll to somebody. That's a safety feature.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure, but I mean, like, not the ridiculous. Like, I'm just gonna kind of stare at somebody else's damn feet.
No, that
like,
part's dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. God's sakes. That's fine.
This is one that like. The first impression of it, I wasn't paying particularly close attention, and then I got hung up on the idea that, like, hang on, when she's getting kind of murdered over the credits, like, she's clearly in distress and being murdered. I'm like, that doesn't fit with, if this is like a time loop with the idea that it sounds like the person's having sex, and then it clearly becomes, like, violent choking. Right. And I thought, like, what is going on there? And then when I went back and, like, paid closer attention, I'm like, oh, right, the monster's a baby. Now I get the metaphor. So, maybe I'm just slow on the uptake, but it's wearing its message on its sleeve, but it's fun. And it's got genuine tension until you kind of figure out what the gag is.
Yeah.
I felt like the murderer was just supposed to be a person in a baby mask.
Ah.
And I couldn't tell if it was meant to be, if it just was a person in a baby mask, or if it was meant to be a person in a baby mask, if that makes sense.
I think it's too convenient to me to have it not be like very clearly trying to make a message out of it, with the pregnancy test, because otherwise, like, either one by itself would be fine, but together you have to feel like, or at least I felt like there was a motif that they're going for, like, ah, get it, you'll put these elements together. But that also could just be me reading into the tea leaves, that is, you know, equally useless as trying to read actual tea leaves. So, meh. Meh, that's a fine opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the
hard-hitting journalism people come here for.
It's now. It's a 4-minute short. If you got 4 minutes to do a thing, you could do worse things.
Yeah,
it's true.
And after you've masturbated twice, you still got 3.5 minutes. So
can't smoke anymore. Not in here anyway. Just to build things.
Not if you use enough lube.
Fair.
Giggity.
1.21 giggity. Why? Okay. So let's talk about, by the way, folks, we called an audible on Together because though it is very good, we didn't all get a chance to see it because some of us were doing way cooler shit. So we're going to go for, we realized we had all seen Weapons, and that seems to be the only movie that people want to go see these days, which is kind of awesome. So we'll talk about Weapons or Armas. Not yeah. Ana de Armas. But I have to start calling her, I guess, Annie Guns. Ana de Armas.
I'm surprised we're not doing it right now.
Annie Guns. Gonna hang out with Tony Flags and Bill of the Bull.
Huh. Yeah, why not?
But, Weapons. So this is directed by the dude who directed Barbarian, which was not my favorite, and it stars Julia Garner, who is not my favorite, and yet I ended up absolutely loving this thing.
Zach Krieger is the guy you're looking for as the director.
Krieger. Although it's spelled Kreger. Kreger's. Yep. And so the first time I was reading something, I was like, wait, is this just like a super overly cute reviewer and the director's actual first name is Craig?
That would be hilarious.
He was like, Kreger's chose to do this. I'm like, it's hard to say. Hard to take somebody seriously when they're Kregging. But
it reminds me of that story that Matt Damon told about taking his cat, moving to New York, and taking their elderly cat to the vet, and the cat, like, neurologist or whatever else, and he's like, and I swear to God, the guy's name is Chad. It's like, how are you supposed to take, like, say, listen, to give medical advice about your pet from Chad? It's like, Kriggers.
Maybe this your cat shouldn't be so much of a pussy. Shut up, Chad.
To go even further afield, I had someone that I'm convinced was at least a little bit older than me come into work and order a pizza. And we just take people's names and you just give them a holler when it's ready. And, all right, name, Braden. And I'm like, hang on. I assessed you as being slightly older than me. You might be the Braden, the first one, the person that started this whole mess where everyone has a slightly weirder name for, like, boring white people
Prime.
Names. Yeah, like, this is the first, you are the guy from all other Bradens, Jadens, Ladens, whatever else they are now. They all come from you. And it makes perfect sense. It would be an Edina, Minnesota.
Mitochondrial Braden.
Yes, there you go. He is the mitochondrial Braden. Check out his sweet frosted tips.
I do like Braden Prime.
Braden Prime's also good.
Especially if you've seen the whole new She-Ra series, which everybody should.
Oh, man, it's good.
We have, like, Horde Prime.
Yeah.
And then all the all
both
little Horde acts.
He-Man and the She-Ra series lately have been awesome.
You know, I tried to show my daughter the She-Ra series, the original, and she was not having any of it. Because they all just looked like adults.
Yeah,
and all the She-Ra people are teenagers, and so she was like, "Yeah, their costumes are really revealing, and I just don't get it." I'm like, oh well, I guess the other one was written by men who are writing for themselves chiefly, and this one
in Hollywood
was written by girls writing for girls. Yeah,
weird.
I know, but that has nothing to do with Weapons, really. When you get right
down to
it,
that was a pretty impressive digression.
But bringing it home. Weapons, as you might have heard from the trailer, starts with a whole classroom full of children walking out of their houses and, like, Naruto running into the night at 2:17 a.m. And we just take from there, like, the teacher in the classroom, and we follow the parents of some of the kids and the police as they kind of go throughout a day. Weirdly, there are chunks of this that just aren't about a school classroom worth of missing kids because they're just hanging out with these characters. And I was kind of here for that.
Yeah, I think for this movie to work as well as it did, you had to kind of just steep in the characters and the like the conventions of the town. Because as you head towards the final act, then I think you can see fair enough motivations for some kind of outlandish behavior.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And I think that slow burn was instrumental in making that work. Or we, you know, meh.
Yeah, I boy, I've been having a difficult time with this because, like, there's part of me. So, like, okay, let's try to be reasonable here. So, like, on the overall, I like this. On the overall, I like this, but there's a lot of elements of it that I did not much care for, and then like, sort of coming out of it and being like, you know, you look around the landscape and you see like kind of the overall overwhelming reaction, and it's like, what did I did it wrong? I must have done something wrong. Because I didn't like what's happening, and so it's like I don't think it was a bad movie like at all. I really did like it quite a bit, but I just like I found myself being more frustrated and impatient than like anything like any other overwhelming feeling was just like impatient and frustrated.
See, that's my as we think talked about at length on this podcast. You know, my takeaway from Barbarian was like exactly that. And I walked out of this just kind of elated and finally going like, yes, this must be what people felt like that were just going apeshit about Barbarian. This is how they felt coming out of the theater. I feel like I can see them now. I don't get it, but I knew how it felt. And that's a cool feeling. And because now I get to have that feeling about this movie and like, great. Which means this guy is now just has the at least the same, if not slightly better track record as like Rob Zombie for me. So like, that's pretty good. So.
We had a little bit of a mix-up, and so we had to restart the recording, and now I'm not sure how many of the things that we said were said and how many things we need to say again. But let me just say, I really enjoyed this film, and part of it, I think, was reading afterward that Magnolia was one of the biggest things he had based it on, because that I could see that through line where he's taking time to do these little interweaving character stories and telling things from different angles without getting too repetitive and spending some time just soaking in these characters just made the story run better, I think. And I was prepared the way that he parceled out the information and put the thing together. I was ready for that reveal and the back half of it to just be a fairy tale, right? Like, I felt like very deftly managed my expectations the whole time without being condescending. And like, just at a structural level, that's so satisfying that it wouldn't matter if there were things that were off about it.
So that was kind of the, what you just described was a lot of what I did like about it was that part of it, like especially the lead lady's character, Julie Garner's character, I really liked how she's kind of messy and is kind of frustrating as a lead character, because like on the one side you go like, I can't even begin to imagine what it would feel like to be in that position, having these children disappear and all this kind of stuff. Like that part of it is just like, oh, it just makes your heart hurt. But then it occurs as a character that she's not just sort of one line.
Well, it's clear that she was a hot mess long before this.
That was the thing. Yes, that was one of the choices that they made that I thought was interesting, was that they make allusions to this that other thing prior, but they don't really dwell on it a whole lot. Like, it's sort of like, it just sort of is identified, but then it's like, it's not super critically important. So, like, it just is, but it just kind of like, but it never really alludes to the idea that she's, like, legitimately, like, a bad person. It's just sort of like, maybe her motivations are like good, but her thought process is not so good. Like, and so it's sort of like, you know, her intention, her heart's in the right place, but it's like, eh, you know.
Or she's a good person with bad habits.
Yeah, basically. And like, they just kind of show it out in kind of like not so good ways and stuff like that. So like, I thought that was a very good like that was a really, really good choice. And like that, I like that you get a main character who just sort of is like has those layers too. Because so often, especially with the female protagonist at the center of it, you kind of just get one and a half notes, and that's pretty much about the size of it. Mm. And that's, you don't get any more. And that's, you get like your motivation is guy, or you know, like, or sorry, your motivation is career, and it's like, okay. So it's sort of like, so I like that there is that part of it. And I really wish I would have known the Magnolia thing, the Magnolia thing beforehand, because like one of my frustrations with this was that like when it's told out of order and the way that it went, I liked learning about these different characters and how things interwove, but I got very impatient because it was like the points that are being made and the information that's being, you know, kind of doled out. I was like, okay, you've made the point. You've identified this thing. And I'm like, okay, well, let's get on the next thing. Like, nah, we're going to keep on with this thing. And like, by the time we got to Aiden Eric's character, like, I want this to get to the next chapter for fuck's sake. Like, I don't, like, oh my God. And I was just like, so I got made me feel very, very impatient. Like that part of it kind of did. And so it's like, so it's a weird balancing act between like being interested in the development of the kind of building out of the characters. But then like, then there's part of me that was just like, let's get moving. Let's get going. Cause like, you know, the townie junkie guy, like anything that, any part that he was involved in, I was like, I'm down with this. This is great. Mm-hmm. But then like the dynamic between Josh Brolin's character and his wife, and then like the guys at the construction site, those scenes and stuff, and that like that whole kind of bit, it was just, it all that felt like it was like, it felt like 2 hours by itself. And it was just like, it just, all right, let's get to it already for fuck's sake. So mm-hmm. that part of it made me feel very impatient. And then like once you kind of very quickly figure out, and to your point, Joshua, about, you know, when we were text message about how this was sort of like the thing that Longlegs was like trying to be, I thought that was very astute, because this lead bad guy character is infinitely more interesting because she's actually doing stuff and like has stuff done to her, and like there's a motivation behind like gathering up the things, because like, you know, like I'm sick, I don't really know why, I'm gonna try echinacea. I'm gonna try, you know, cooling stones. I'm gonna try auras. I'm gonna try, you know, radio, whatever. All this kinds of stuff. And so, like, I really appreciate that. Like, she had more stuff going on with her as a character. So I was like, that made it a lot more interesting in that respect. Because like Longlegs is just sort of like, I'm gonna talk funny with a funny face. And like, okay, and then what? Like, and that's it. Okay.
So it's like Adam Sandler does that, and he's terrifying.
It's like. I think at the beginning of this, I thought it was a really smart decision to have the narration be told from the point of view of the kid, because the kid's perspective, because it was like, I thought it made it more interesting and kind of kept it at arm's length in terms of like trying to explain things, and then it kind of settles into what's actually happening and kind of pieces it together. And then I enjoyed the kind of absolute bug nuts the last 15 minutes, very much not like the last bug nuts 15 minutes of Barbarian, which I was so mad I could punch a puppy. And it was like, this was like, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was funny and energetic. But prior to that, there's a lot of weird rule moving around and stuff that like kind of, and I'm going to irritate both of you, I'm sure. But like part of the thing that really just made me so angry, I think I kind of punched my own leg a little bit because I was so frustrated, was like the whole thing about like, you know, like, oh well, like a month went by and this, that, whatever, this kind of thing. And then like in passing they're like, oh, the federal agents were there, and then like they do the thing where they're like coming by the house and like, oh, we got to clean up the house because they're gonna, these police, the law enforcement people are going to come, and these guys come by and they do a lot of the, well, ma'am, well, shucks, we'll just take a quick look around, have a nice day kind of thing. And I was like, the fuck they did. Like, it just pissed me off so bad. I almost had to walk out of the theater just to gather myself. I was so angry. It was just sort of like, it was like, okay, she's doing mind control things, but not on their superiors and their superiors' superiors, their superiors. 17 children disappear from a small town like that. There's 12 agents on that house for a year. Like, they're not going to just, oh, howdy, ma'am. Have a nice afternoon. Like, it's fuck off. And it was just like you are so clever and very, very creative, legitimately, like, sincerely. I so admire this creative gem that came up with this creative gem of an idea. And like, sincerely, no bullshit whatsoever. But it's like, don't put a mechanic in that that's so fucking trip over your own dick clumsy that, like, it just pisses me off so much. Like, it's so creative. This is such an interesting idea. And, like, little shit like that makes me nuts.
Charlie still has a lot of metal music rumbling around in his belly. He's got the fire like, in him.
It's just like, and I hate feeling that way. I don't want to be that, like, well, actually, the flux capacitor did. I don't want to be that person. But it's like, when you're so clever and so creative to come up with such a cool idea like this, and using a witch kind of construct and all these things, and, like, just have some shower fart of a thing like that. It's really made me mad. It's just like, made me angry.
And I think that's the kind of
railed against a movie that made me angry.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's no shame in that. But I think that's, you know, that speaks to the, I think the concept that you introduced, Josh, where like, if a movie is built up enough currency, like the heavy lifting ain't so heavy later. And that just kind of blew right past me in my theatrical viewing, because I was just so engaged. Speaking of which, boy, was this a fun movie to see in a theater.
Yeah, that's, I got to give them huge credits for that, because like, seeing
this
it was
a great theater movie.
Yeah, our theater, the theater I was in was basically sold out. Like, there's maybe
mine too. Years. Yeah.
And it was like, and so you remember that a lot of times with something that's weird like this and off the wall, like, normal people get real uncomfortable and like get kind of, and so they get kind of engaged in what's happening and they're like laughing and they're kind of like, oh. And like, a couple things occur, like one thing occurs, and then the jam near the entire crowd goes, oh, like mm-hmm. that kind of like, oh, that kind of thing. And it's like, I love that. That's such a great feeling. It can, like, get kind of goosebumpy. Like, it's so much fun when that kind of thing
sure.
happens.
We'll have
like,
to, ah. I don't want to spoil it. So we'll have to confirm at some point during the break if we're thinking of the same moment. But there's a moment in my theater that went from a laugh that made me worry that the audience wasn't going to take this movie seriously. And before the laughter even died off, it turned into a gasp from that same audience. And I was like, oh good. We're going to have a good time here. And
yeah, yeah, they did a little down tuning. There's a couple points of this where there is a, oh my God, oh my God. And then they go, boo, minor key. And you're like, oh, like, oh geez. You know, so I was like, so, you know, there was a little bit of playing around with that kind of stuff. And I just don't want to be the peer in the punch of the party. Like, you know, because I did like this overall. It was just, there was some decision making that I really admired and thought was great. And then there's some decision making that just made me very frustrated.
So. I'm just trying to think, like, I was eager to move on from the first segment pretty quickly. I think it's just, I'm sorry, man, just Julia Garner is like a Bill Paxton for me. Just the Justin Timberlake hair and the jawline and the constantly looking like she's about to burst into tears. I don't like to look at her face. I'm sure she's a nice person. She's a talented actor. She just irrationally just do not like her face. And when she's in stuff, it's unpleasant. So I was kind of waiting for her to be done because she's deliberately unlikable too.
Yeah, like, that was a choice. That was certainly a choice for sure. Yeah.
And then they really introduced Cop Guy, and they're like, oh, now we're following Cop Guy. Oh, that's super fun. Like, okay. And like, Alden Ehrenreich is just fun to watch. Like, I thought he was, I just really enjoyed the, like, him having the worst 2 days of his life.
Like, there's some great comedy.
So much comedy. Like, am I going to get stuck? Is anything going to stick my finger when I put my hand in your pocket? No, sir, it is not. Ow, it's fucking boom.
Well, did he,
punches him in the head, front and he's seat, like, oh, fuck, I punched him in the head.
When he's in the front seat and looking back at the guy, and there's like a 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and he just goes, do you have AIDS? It's like, that was the comedic timing of that was unreal.
So good.
It was unreal.
Anything, hepatitis, any shit like that?
And I don't think so. And he's like, fuck.
Leading up to the reprise of Chekhov's needle in the tent.
Yeah.
Like, these are moments. Like, I don't know. I guess I was expecting this to be just the heaviest indie horror thing. And like, maybe it hits and it gives more of an It Follows vibe, and maybe it misses and it's insufferable, but it's going to be heavy and serious. And it was just a little bit silly in just the right spots.
Yeah, this is like, not a somber movie. Like, I truly expected that too, just to be like a really like heavy buckle up. It'll be pretty quiet the whole time in the theater because we're all just kind of like browbeaten by the depression. But it is a lot of good laughs in this movie without ruining the tone, because as we kind of mentioned earlier, like it manages to, I think, pull off the swings back and forth.
Yeah, I thought so too. I could see like mileage varying based on how much you were enjoying Cop Man, because you do get quite a bit of Cop Man.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just sort of like in the thing that kind of, you know, like, you know, maybe I've just seen too many damn movies, but it's sort of like once you kind of get the feeling that like father-in-law is chief of police, he had this situation with the teacher lady at some point before, and like he and wife have kind of worked things together, and now they're like, oh, well, you know, maybe you'll fix it, that sort of thing, and like all that can be done in about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and it's like, but boy, does it kind of keep going. And I really like him as an actor. Like, it, you know, I don't, you know, dislike him at all. I think he's great, but it's kind of like at a certain point, I got a real like, all right, come on, let's get, all right, let's pick it up, let's go, come on, let's get moving. And then the same way to some degree with Benedict Wong's character, like, yeah, I liked.
No, no shit.
I like the grocery scene with him and the partner husband guy, in like the scene at the house before the witch lady shows up. I like those parts, but the breathy conversations in the principal's office, I feel like every indie comedy dramedy director did that character for like 15 years. And I just like, I'm like, I just get, I get that. That's one that makes me super impatient. Like the, oh, we need to have a conference about this thing and that thing. Like, yes, I fucking get it. Like, I get it. He's an ineffectual, stupid administrator. Every single one of them, every single administrator sucks. Like, I get it. But it's like that kind of like that kind of tweety sort of, I don't know. It's just it's it feels very one note for somebody like Benedict Wong, who could certainly probably do more, you know, with it, because it just feels very kind of like, you know, kind of country club LL Bean gay, and I just was like, eh. I don't know.
Yeah, on the other hand, if you have to have that character, you might as well have Benedict Wong play.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, it could have been some dude with like John C. Reilly hair being like, just with a big, the horror kind of, you know, look about him, mouth breathing the whole time, and that would have been just way worse. So that's fair. Yeah, that's a good point.
I felt sad because I really loved just the small details of their life together. Like, they had the Mickey and the Minnie Mouse shirts that you just know they bought as a joke and then just ended up frequently wearing them at the same time.
Yeah.
The fact that they sit down to eat, they're like, watch football, I think, and have a snack. And the snack is 7 hot dogs for 2 people. 7.
Yeah.
That's an odd number.
Yeah. Usually it'd be 9.
Yeah.
Otherwise you
would. That's still an odd number. Damn it. Stay in school.
They couldn't make me then, you can't make me now.
So one thing we should probably touch on before we close out on this one is there's some people on the internet that are just, they're like, don't understand stuff, and then like some people that can't deal with the idea of like metaphor and symbolism or things meaning something other than they mean. Or, you know, there's just, these concepts are just lost on people. So there's a lot of this extreme kind of, you know, reactions. And as Conlon likes to put it, like, they're just trying to misunderstand it. Like, they're actively trying to not understand something. Like, yes, get used to it, kid. But, like, the thing with the gun above the house, for like as an example, and it's sort of like, I don't think necessarily a filmmaker has to, like, decide everything for you necessarily. Like, it can sometimes just be it. Like, that's just sort of...
In the interviews I've read with Zach Krieger, that is, in that exact example, he says, I don't even know what that means. It was something that kind of was a dream type of thing, and I like Lynchian filmmaking, so I was like, all right, if this is important in my dreams, let's stick it in the movie, because it's weird. And like, that's it. It's meant to make you go, huh, and think about it. Like, there is actually no canon meaning.
Yeah,
and it's driving the internet insane.
Because at the same time, you can go in the abstract this imagery is him worried about his kid.
Yep.
And thinking about the kid as vulnerable, and however you want to visualize that, like, that's what came into his head. So the giant AK-47 floating over the house. And then everything else we can bring in as, you know, and use it as a mirror or a Rorschach test. But I do think it's clear what it's meant to convey. And it does kind of bug me when people are just like, what was that even? What did that even mean? Like, well, it was meant to convey an emotion. Like, did you catch the emotion? Then shut up. You're fine. I think that's funny.
Maybe it was meant to convey you to this conversation and maybe you learn about yourself.
Hey. Well, it makes me think of seeing so many, like, forever long ago, seeing Pedro Almodovar's talk to her in a theater at the Camel View, Josh, in the middle of the day with me and a bunch of old people. And boy, is it fun to be in a theater full of old people when, like, there's a silent film sequence where the dancers are dancing inside of a gigantic vagina. Mm. And they're sort of like, you're sort of sitting there going, like, I'm here, sitting here with a bunch of nanas and grandpas. And it's like, this is, but it's like, is it literally this? No. There's about five different ways. Almodovar, it's always women's issues. But it's sort of like, you can inscribe different kinds of meaning or not apply meaning to it. It can just be literally like, this is just silly dream shit and one of the next thing. Doesn't really matter. Like, it's just sort of like, it just is, and it fits in the tapestry of the thing. Like, you know, and then you get the more abrasive types like Paul Schrader, who does that too. Like, you watch, was it one of Defoe that he did about 8-9 years ago? And it's sort of like, there's just shit that occurs there. You're like, well, okay. Like, all right, well, it's just kind of, maybe that can mean this, and maybe it can mean that. And that, there's no right or wrong answer. This is not a light switch. Like, it's sort of, and so that's the kind of part of, so that's the part of this where there's parts of that, that's the big part of this that I really appreciate a lot, is that, where it's sort of like, there is some things that occur, and not just to done in that kind of like, we're just going to do something weird on purpose kind of business, where like, they get long legs, like, that's like, the scene where she's in the house is so fucking unnerving, but then like walks into the hardware store, like acting all fucking weird and like buying weird suspect stuff. And like nothing doesn't even move the needle. And it's like, it's just weird. And it's like, okay, fucking come on. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah, like there's a weird, that is a creative way of evoking a mood or telling a story. And then there's weird that's just like, dude, wouldn't it be fucked up if... Yeah. And I think this stays on the right side of the, like, this is an unconventional way to tell this part of the story, but you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to say it, Joshua. Like, there is this self-indulgent, you know, self-cranial rectal approach to doing artsy kind of off-the-wall things. Or there's the way that just sort of, like, we're not going to be like sitting in the corner, like with our arms folded, like looking for the reaction. Like, that's just, I don't get that feeling from him with this one. Maybe a little more so, maybe more with Barbarian, I would say. Less so with this, much less so with this, which I really appreciate. Yeah, like for sure.
I just like the simple logic that it works under and the way that they tell us how this whole magic system works without any words.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was something that, like, it could have gone completely obtuse in, not in a bad way, but like in like the Dark Song sort of way, or you go the opposite way and it's like you spend half the movie explaining stuff.
There was no scene in this, I don't think, was there, where some protagonist runs to, well, I guess it used to be the library, now it would be to like legally distinct gaggle search engine to like look up how does witch possess kids. Like no one does the usual folklore study scene to learn how to defeat the big bad. It's just they watch what happens in front of them and then just go, okay, if that works for her, I can see if it works for me. You know, it's the metaphysical equivalent of, oh, the bad guy dropped the gun, I'll pick it up and shoot it.
Like, when she never goes, do you like my precious plant? I got it from a yogi in Bahrain. And like, you don't have to. She comes in, she has this power, we accept she has this power. And then kid figures that if he does the same thing she does, then maybe it'll work for him too. And he can turn the tables, and then it's the turn tables turn, man. I can't stress like a record player. Like the catharsis, which I guess is the equivalent of Magnolia's Reign of Frogs, is just the children running through the town, just running through houses like bull moose.
So good.
And occasionally you get like empty space between houses, and then witch lady runs by going, ma, and then kids run.
She runs like a Muppet.
And that's so funny. But
it is really great.
The like 4-year-old dives through a window and you go, oh, fuck. And then, and then, but then by the end of it, when they start tearing her apart, you're like, that's awesome. They're tearing her apart. Oh,
oh,
oh, really? Okay. Well, good. So it's like, it's such a little emotional roller coaster, but it doesn't feel like it's not cohesive. Like you figured out how to bring in the Gonzo ideas. Mm-hmm. And the tone swings without making it feel like three different movies, you know?
Well, that scene where they're tearing her apart, and you as the audience member kind of go like, okay, well, once her pulse stops, then the thing stops. And it's like, and then you get these kids covered in blood and gore. Mm-hmm. Just like, okay. Although I do want to get your guys, I guess one other last thing, I guess, is to, I want to get your all's opinion on the little CODIS at the end. CODIS? Codic? Coda? Code of Arms? Whatever it is.
Codachrome, yeah.
Coda, yes, that's the one. The thing where, you know, you've got Brolin's character carrying the son away, and like, you know, how the all these kids were very changed, and like some, well, now, you know, like a little bit of time has passed, and some of them even started talking, but they're all very different, and this, that, whatever, this kind of thing. And I was like, but wait just a fucking minute. Didn't you say before that, like, once you kind of snap out of it, you just sort of go, huh? And then that's kind of it. And it's like, but did the rules change, or is it like a saturation thing, or like they have little
I thought
bodies.
It was a saturation thing.
Like, the longer you're in that thing, the harder it is to crawl out of it.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it doesn't really
that's
matter.
That's kind of how I figured.
Because, like, Roland had just gotten knocked into it.
Right? Yeah, they'd done it for, like, a few minutes. And, yeah, the kids have been under for, like, a while. So
Makes sense. And you can logic that out forever. But I just, like, in terms of a dialogue-y bit or whatever else, I kind of was like, meh. You know, I was like, it's enough to have him carrying the little boy looking. And hats off to that kid actor, because he just looks just completely vacant. And it's sort of like,
that kid's seen some shit.
Yeah, like hats off to him. Like, I was like, I didn't know that have a bunch of 9-year-old Vietnam vets. You're like, good, well done. You know, like, that's a good play for him. But I just don't know if it needed that little bit of a button. I was like, okay, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, whatever. It's just sort of like, it just sort of is.
So, yeah, I ended up really into this more so because it ran counter to expectation and just. It felt the same vibe as like Sinners, as far as like audacity to do a thing. I don't think this is quite as good as Sinners was, because very few things on this earth are, but it is that, like, you didn't have to turn all of those dials to 11 and you did. You could have had like a less interesting plot and better characters or shittier characters and a bigger, broader plot, and it just balanced all those things so perfectly well, and then brought in all of these fun characters to play around with. So for me, like, I felt like it earned it like a 9 out of 10. I was annoyed. Nice. I also did that run on the way to the car and freaked out my wife, and that's awesome.
Joshua.
There you go. Keeping the flame alive. Yeah, this was a fucking blast. Saw this with the roommates and some friends and stuff, and not everyone that went is a horror fan normally, and there were definitely things where they're like, yeah, that was a lot for me, but I can't deny how much fun that was and how good it was. So, like, it was interesting to kind of watch and listen, you know, to the rest of the audience in real time kind of discover this weird little thing that you know, I loved the trailer, but if someone said, hey, I want to get into horror movies, would this be a good place to start? I would probably be like, maybe not. This seems a little weird. But it's cool to see that it succeeded on that level. And there's not just like mass market appeal behind this. I think there's definitely a lot of care, a lot of thought. And, you know, whether or not I liked every aspect or anyone liked every single aspect, I don't think it's ever lazy. I think it's always reaching for something meaningful. And that's also just a cool thing to see happen on screen. So, yeah, had a blast with this. Highly recommend. Yeah, 9 out of 10 from me as well.
So I'm going to, I want to be the low man on the totem pole, but not necessarily with malice. It's just with some struggles with some various, this, that, other thing. But I mean, I feel like I'm arguing with myself, but I think I did really like it. I didn't walk out. I didn't walk out of it going like, oh, Richard, Richard, Richard. I just walked out of it being like, all right. And then like, you know, thought about it for a little bit. And it's like, no, I really like that. I really like that. I really like that. But this really made me mad. Like, but I like this. And so it's kind of one of those situations where it's like, I didn't walk out going like, well, that was a waste of my time. Or I didn't walk out going like, yeah, you know, it wasn't either one of those extremes. So it's just kind of like a, like, yeah, it's good. I admire the, and just like to your point about, you know, about Sinners, like I can really, whether or not everything clicks with me or not, I really can appreciate and really sincerely admire when somebody just goes like, like, your countertop, I will set my testicles upon it. Like, I could see that being sincere, and you can smell when it's not. So I would say, you know, absolutely, super sincerely, I really admire and appreciate that. So, you know, like I said, I'll be a little bit on totem pole, but not because I'm just a grumpy person that gets caught up on dumb, ruley details, like the way FBI works. But besides that, I would say seven out of 10. 7 out of 10. Do we consider stabbing out of a flap in a tent the same as stabbing around a corner? Because, like, you know, like I just stayed in a tent for a handful of days, and like, oh, that stupid tent flap. You just look at it. You're like, you better not do nothing over there. You
out of tent. I was again reminded of Shang Lang's. Part of his new set is, and then we got into the tent, and then he zipped up the tent, and it was like, oh, now we're inside. You've just turned this windbreaker into a force field. And I was like, oh, that's a joke that Charlie's gonna want to have on a wall.
He's gotta get a new special together, damn it. Like, I love that dude.
Oh, the so would it help though, Charlie, if we assume that these FBI agents were hired after Trump was elected?
Well, fair enough. I mean, yeah, like the standard of actual protocol and rule of law, it's like it's getting a little loosier goosier these days. It's just I'll go back to like you know, back in my day, you had good honest FBI agents like
we had good honest spooks. Yeah.
It's like
those were some boots worth looking at. My phone, right, boys?
No idea.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh, just you're so much friendlier fascism. Love it. All right, Tom, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about these other two flicks. Shall we?
Yeah, sure.
So next up, we have Mr. Harrigan's phone, or el teléfono de Señor Harrigan. And Señor Harrigan, al front door, I don't know. So I was interested to read this because I heard it was a movie on Netflix. And after I read it, I was interested to see how they adapted it into a movie. So, like... I don't know, like, I usually read everything Stephen King has written, but I missed that little collection somehow. So reading through this one, it is a classic, like, Stephen King story of a kid who has this one summer that changes his life. And the difference is that it hinges on this new technology of the iPhone, which he's writing at least 10 years later, so he's not making it au courant, but... Except for that, it is still the same story that he wrote in the 80s about stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's down to the slang. And so it's really funny when, you know, people are like, cock-a-doodie, pootie-scootie, as said the 18-year-old. And you're like, okay, I suppose. They call the principal an alky.
Yeah. I remember that from childhood.
And like, the fuck you did, you know? Like, so, and it is kind of a simple story. It's like this kid has a relationship with an old man where he goes and reads him stories, and he buys the old man an iPhone, and he, old man dies, and kid makes sure that he gets buried with the iPhone. And then kid kind of calls and leaves him voicemails. And he, when he leaves a voicemail about this kid beating him up, the bully ends up dead the next day. And there's this, like, is it the power of Mr. Harrigan beyond the grave, or is it just random fucked upness? And,
or is it the anime Death Note? Yes. Yeah, yes, like, it is.
That's what it, but that's just how confusing life was when I was a teenager in 2007. And we used to go down to the malt shop and like, yeah. Oh, it's King. Oh yeah. So I think it ends up fine. I think we can talk about filming a thing versus adapting a thing, because this filmed that short story. Mm. And if it had instead adapted it, it could have fixed the dialogue a little bit, added some story beats, made some things more harrowing than they were on the page, you know, taking it from like more of a gentle kind of nostalgia thing to something that genuinely gives you chills. You know, like, could have been taken in directions, but instead it is, like, for better or for worse, it's just a kind of a upper mid King short story.
It's just kind of ambling along. Yeah. In text I had kind of said, like, this was, it reminded me of the difference between like the anthology series Amazing Stories versus the, like, the Twilight Zone. And like, in purview in general, like, Twilight Zone going to be creepier, going to have some weird moments of a surprise or a scare or some tension. And Amazing Stories was much more like this, I think, where you're like, oh, maybe there is a little bit of magic in the world. And like, that was always kind of how I felt like those left you. I could be totally wrong. It's been a long time, but that was sort of what the problem I had with this was, like, ah, yes, this is kind of a nice little character study with these people. And it's definitely old man yells at the cloud, which was written by an old man also yelling at the cloud through his movie. But it's harmless, I guess. And like, that's kind of fine. I kind of just felt like I wasn't sure what I was supposed to take away from this, aside from that was an agreeable way to waste an hour. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very, that's, I think Josh kind of hit the nail up on the top where, like, because like, If It Bleeds is, I think it's kind of a cool collection, because like, it has this one has Rat, and then it has Life of Chuck in it.
And yeah, so like, neat. Life of Chuck is beautiful.
Yeah. And it's just, well, and it's so interesting because like, the four stories that are in this one, because this is actually, this one came out, was it like 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, somewhere in the ballpark. And as like, it's so interesting because If It Bleeds is sort of like, it's like fine, I guess. Like, it's not
Outsider, just retold as a novella.
Yeah, it's just basically the same setup. Yeah, exactly. It's the same setup as The Outsider, but it's like, it's just sort of told through like, oh, there's this reporter, and then there's like the bomb thing, and it's like, you know, so it's fine. But then like, Life of Chuck, I just like, you know, it's on the page, the adaptation that Flanagan did, it's just beauty in spades and lovely. You know, Rat is basically a Tales from the Crypt sort of thing, where it's sort of like, it's like, ah, made like one of those monkey's paw kind of things, like, ah, it won't work out for you, like, ah, it didn't work out for you. But then like, then this one is like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joshua, but I was thinking like, a lot of the first half of this, and my memory of reading this one is like, it kind of, some of the feel of it is like, it reminds me a little bit of the feel of Hearts in Atlantis, kind of.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
like, where there's a little bit of like forebodingness, but it's sort of like, until you get to the, you know, the guys in the suits, and that's that bit. It's kind of like, that's like, which side are we on, you know, or like, who, is he okay? Is he bad? Is he good? Like, what? Like, I don't know. And it's sort of like, and this has that same vibe a little bit with Donald Sutherland and the film adaptation of this. But to Matt's point, it's like, it is more, it never does feel like, it never amps it real high. It just kind of feels gentle in that way. Like, it doesn't, it never makes you feel like super, super uneasy or super scared or super anything. It just kind of like, drifts it through. And yeah, like, oh, maybe there is magic in the world. Kind of like, okay. And that's kind of the the bigger takeaway, really. But it does look nice, you know. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't look cheap. It does actually look like a movie.
Yeah, I think everything about it is just fine, you know. It's a faithful adaptation of this thing. I think the one really interesting part is the bully, because he is not the psychotic, like, Christian Bale in American Psycho 80s bully.
Yeah, he's not carving his name into some kid's chest in Derry.
He's, like, clearly troubled and weirdly emotional. Like, he genuinely seems like he's about to burst into tears all the time.
Yeah, and he is the literal thing. Like, yeah, hurt people. He's like the poster child for that therapy. Yeah.
But then at the end of it, you just go, okay, well, so two people died who probably was pretty okay, like, at least in the context of fiction, that they died. Like, not super sad about those. This kid learned that he doesn't like feeling like he might even have been a little bit responsible for somebody else's death, right? And so he moves on with his life. And it is a kind of slice of life thing. It just, I don't know, it needed to be goosed up a little, I feel like. Just because there's not enough on the page to make it a movie, but they did it anyway.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they don't ever, that's what, I don't know if, the way you just said it just now is like how, one of my takeaways too is like, why wasn't there an additional antagonist for Donald Sutherland's character? Because like in the story, because I went up, dug it out from my shelf. I was like, I went and looked and I was like, yeah, that's what I thought. Because like, it really alludes to some pretty sinister and pretty cold-hearted Henry Ford level, you know, building of a fortune kind of things. And like, that develops some pretty nasty enemies and some bad blood in a lot of different ways. And like, outside of the two yuppies at the funeral, it's like they don't really ever allude to the idea that he's having to fend off people looking for, like, you know, comeuppance or retribution or whatever else. And like, that would be a perfect way to, when you're making the movie, to like add another thing to it. Would be like add some other component or something else that's there. And it's like, instead it just sort of like, it just follows the kind of the A to B pretty much, and doesn't lean into adding more stuff to it necessarily. And it seems kind of like that would have been your area to add something heavier or bigger to it.
I just also feel like Jaden Martell is not the right lead for this. And
I liked him. I thought he was
part of it is he gets stuck with this kind of Forrest Gump level dialogue that he has to do.
Oh yeah.
Where he's just like, I like being here. I know what love is. I'm not a smart man. Like, just like these short declarative sentences, which ever since I heard that Netflix has kind of a corporate edict now that things need to be very simple and explained so that people can follow even when they're not paying attention. And that felt like that's what they were doing, but also that's how it's written in the book. So I don't know. Right. The poor kid, he looks like a school shooter. Okay. I'm sorry. It's like having, you know, Michael Moriarty play somebody's dad or King Joffrey play somebody's like awesome normal kid. It's just like, you're a character actor, and his character, like, he fits Knives Out so well.
Yes.
And then in every other movie, he just looks so sullen all the time and like a little bit sketchy. And in this, it doesn't work because he has to be the wholesome ideal of American youth. And I don't think that's him. That's the wrong guy. They needed I don't know who any of the young children are these days, but you know, they needed a young Cary Grant type instead of a Clark Gable type. See? Yeah.
I thought about that recently with, what's his name? Anthony Carrigan. When he popped up in Superman and also Death of a Unicorn, where it's like, I think of him as Noho Hank. Like, he's a Noho Hank. That's who he is. And then, like, when he popped up other stuff, I was like, I had to kind of idiot a little bit, because I was like, wait, He's not the same. I mean, obviously, this is an actor playing different roles, of course. But it's like, I just think of him as being the one thing. So it's like, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like, it's tricky. Like, maybe this young man in 10 years is going to have a different, you know, he'll look more like Timothy Oliphant and can do some other stuff. Although, you know, to be fair, sometimes people don't grow out of their faces. Like, huh?
Huh?
Oh, I was just saying, like, you know, sometimes people don't necessarily grow out of their faces. Like, was it Garrett Dillahunt, where, like, he was fantastic in Fear the Walking Dead. Like, he's so good in that. But I still look at him like he's the guy from My Name is Earl. I always think of him that way. So it's sort of
imagine
like,
how weird it is to watch Foundation if you just cannot stop thinking of Lee Pace as the Pie Man.
Okay.
So, this guy is fine. Like, I don't want to be too unkind to it. I think it's a 7 out of 10. Come on down to the sock hop with your iPhones.
What say you, Matthew?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I kind of summed it up a little earlier where, like, yeah, this is just sort of gently passing the time. It's not unlike when, like, I'd have to sit through my grandparents watching Little House on the Prairie as a kid. And you're like, there's movement on screen. Boring. Yeah, it's just there's movement on screen literally, and there's some colors. But it's the same every week. I don't know.
I love the idea that it is that kind of Pepperidge Farm Remembers kind of old man.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is an old man telling us a story.
Yeah, he's running into a Cracker Barrel in his day. I ain't mad at it. I just, you know, it falls into that cardinal sin of just kind of being middling, you know. Not cynically, I don't think, but it's just, I don't think there was enough there for this to be what it was. This could maybe work as like a part of an anthology or something, but this, I don't think this was really worth a feature. So for me, yeah, it's like a 6, I guess. Yeah. 6 out of 10. When I die, bury me with my phone.
And a little bit of nostalgia of watching the screen of the iPhone when it calls and shows the little Earth. Like, oh my God. Well, and then also the guy who wrote and directed this, he was the guy who directed Saving Mr. Banks, which I love. Fuck everybody who didn't like it, because I think the movie's great. But he directed that one, and then he wrote, wasn't there something else that stood out to me? He wrote the screenplay for The Blind Side, and then also Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, for fuck's sake. And so it's like when I was kind of looking at his like filmography, I was like, what a fascinating run of things. Fair enough. So yeah, I mean, I'll say 7. I think I'll say 7. Like, I just found this to be like a gentle, decent thing that, like, for something that's gonna be the kind of middle of the strike zone Netflix level of thing, I think it did look a lot more like a real movie than a lot of that type of Netflix stuff does. So yeah, I definitely give a lot of credit for the way that it looks and the gentleness of it. But I think its biggest fault is that it does have the overarching gentleness to a degree at which it kind of robs it of things that could be a lot more suspenseful. Maybe not to the extreme of like you're going to infuse like a Autopsy of Jane Doe level of with a dead person, but it's sort of like I think it could have a little bit more to it in that regard. But you know, as I said, I think it was a gentle sort of pleasant thing. So I'll say 7 out of 10.
As smooth as a word that's original.
Petra's Farm remembers.
Do you remember back when you could go to Circle K and get a 64-ounce soda for 99 cents? Pepperidge Farm remembers. You wore your hypercolor shirt.
Your Varney jeans.
Yeah. Remember when your Jinkos got all wet and you couldn't get them dry? Pepperidge Farm remembers. Oh, yeah, we need to update that dude and just have him talk about Gen X shit.
Yeah.
See, the problem of it is, though, and I blame Seth MacFarlane and some combination thereof, but like when I'm at the grocery store, walking down the aisle with the chips and the cookies, I walk by the section that has the Pepperidge Farm things, and not every single time, but most of the time, walk by that section, yeah, and my brain will go, Petra's Farm remembers. Like, oh, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. Like, shush.
Yeah.
God damn it. Quiet, you.
And from there, it's a short walk to Mr. Hitler makes exceedingly,
good cakes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Clown in a Cornfield, yeah, or El Paso and El Campo de Maíz.
The maze of maíz.
The maze. It's a maze.
Of maíz.
We got a slasher. We got a kind of 90s-ish slasher feeling going on in this thing. Seems predicated on making sure that I hate all of these characters. Yep. I'll have to put out there.
Huh.
Stop me if you've heard this one. Dad and daughter move to a small town because mom died of cancer of the car crash of an overdose, but here's the twist, is dad is having trouble relating to his daughter because he loves her very much, but he's having trouble relating to her as an adult. But by contrast and unexpectedly, daughter is chafing under his authority and eager to define herself as a person. So there's conflict there that you may not be familiar with if you've not seen any films. But yeah, man, I felt like they really wanted me to not like these people, because they got like the two dumb jock guys and the mean girl and the dumb girl, and then kind of dreamboat guy. And all of the adults are horrible people who are Gen Xers but talk like baby boomers.
Yeah.
And they're like, you're participation trophy generation. Like, sir, you're in the participation trophy generation. What are you talking about?
I will say, though, as much as they tried to hammer in Gen X shit all the time, the bit that I thought was an excellent point was when the dad is playing something in the car and he's like, this is great. She's like, Dad, do you know the 90s are as far away from me as the 40s were to you? And he's like, that's not. Oh. And on two levels that works, because, ow, that hurt my soul too. But also I was like, that's a great way to explain to people why I'm sick of hearing Creedence at work. Like, this is so long ago. Can we really put it into this? Like, I love that she just found a perfect comeback that shuts down any kind of nostalgia boner that the dad is trying to give us, despite the movie insisting on a nostalgia boner. So there's boners to be had.
Just, I was gonna say flapping in the breeze, but that's not how that goes. No. I wish I could explain my enjoyment of this, but I was like for one thing, characters, like, I feel like there's been so many proto-y kind of, like, you know, updated for now sort of slasher kind of things that I do find all the characters just loathsome beyond reproach. And like these ones, like, you know, the kind of like the main girl lady, I just didn't find her that mean. And like the kind of the one jock guy is like, okay, whatever. But then like the main kind of like love interest sort of guy is sort of like, I found him sort of pleasant. And then like the daughter, I was like, you know, like, oh, she's like, she wants to kind of like, you know, go out and be herself. I think maybe it was the setup we've seen 1,000 times. We're like, oh, we look at your new city because the parent passes away and that kind of thing. And I was thinking about this thing, if you don't watch Good Hang with Amy Poehler on YouTube, you should definitely do it, because Amy Poehler is wonderful. But she had Aubrey Plaza on there recently, and Aubrey Plaza, her husband had committed suicide not too long ago, and that was kind of this thing. And so Amy Poehler said this thing in the interview where she asked, you know, she said, we've been through all this kind of heavy stuff. This has been a really terrible run of things, whatever else. And she just she said, how are you feeling today? And I was like, whoa, that's a hell of a, like, I've been thinking about this for like the last week and a half. Like, that's a hell of a thing to ask. Like, it's really amazing. And like reframes the thing of like, how are you doing? Like, to how are you doing today? And I was like, and so I was thinking about the daughter character of this. And yes, we've seen the setup a bunch of times, but I like the idea that like they went through this awful thing that happened, but like on any given day, it doesn't mean you're just going to be necessarily just like crying all day long and wrapped up in a blanket. Like, there's some days you're like, I'm going to do some stuff. And so I kind of liked how there was a little bit of there wasn't any big monologue-y speeches about the mom, my mom's gone and blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, that wasn't that part of this character's thing. And so it's like, okay, good. So I like that. Oh, that was pretty good. And then it was like, and then just from there, it was like the setup of the slasher part of it, and then having it just be the whole, like, like, your generation sucks. It was like the thing. And then basically like the whole thing of like the fire and the shutting the plant down or whatever else. And like how it basically was sort of, you know, like, oh, it's like, well, you set it on purpose for the insurance money or whatever. And I was sort of like, it's like, oh, isn't this a great metaphor for our parents' generation? Because like, they don't give a shit. They get theirs. Like, they don't give a fuck about anybody else, like, by and large. And so it's sort of like, that's what's causing so many problems. And it's like, yes, thank you for putting that in the thing. Even though it's a clumsy sort of basic metaphor. I'm like, yes, I appreciate that. Like, thank you. And it's like, and then they call it out on screen. I was like, yes.
I was going to say the same thing in like a negative way. That's so funny. It was like the plot of this ends up being not like we kill four kids to appease he who walks behind the ears, he who washes behind the ears. But
circle gets the square.
But it's just sometimes these kids just fucking suck, dude. When you get a bad batch, you just gotta murder some of them, because otherwise your town's just gonna be shitty. It's like, do you mean like the crops aren't gonna grow? Like, no, just gonna be shitty. Like, they're gonna be hanging out and like revving the engines on their muscle cars. And
well, and see, now this is where I ran into my like, okay, fuck this movie moment, which is when it's revealed that it's all the older folks in town. Cause then my brain went, man, wouldn't I rather be watching Hot Fuzz right now? Because that did this with actual comedy and actually good action scenes. And I was watching something that was way too unfunny for how unserious it was, where I just was like, yep, they're trying to keep it light, but there's never really a joke, and it's way too gory to be like the little kiddie movie. So like, it was sort of serving no one, I thought. I was frustrated.
It made me want to watch like Thanksgiving if I wanted to watch kind of a silly modern slasher, or Dark Harvest if I wanted to watch a like creepy autumnal thing, you know. Is and Dark Harvest was the one I kept thinking about because this is based on a book.
Yeah,
and I want to know how big that book is. Like, what
I think
the fuck
there might
is
be more than
book?
One. Right? I did some kind of cursory Google thing. Let me, you talk, I'll look.
Yeah, how many pages is this book? Because it seems like it could be a pamphlet. It's like or a short story. Like,
well, it's a young adult thing, isn't it?
Not since Slugs have I been so surprised that. I mean, I would believe it was like a Fear Street kind of.
That would make sense.
Not to diminish it, but to say like it does feel like it's aimed at that demographic. Although at the same time, like, there's some of the laziest gags. Like, can't drive stick shift, can't read cursive, can't do a dial a rotary phone. Like, they, Dumb Girl and Mean Girl, get killed because they don't even. They barely recognize that it's a phone. I was like, I think people my son's age would know what to do with that thing or would figure it out real quick. Like, that's silly and lazy. And it's like having FBI agents who don't do the proper follow-up. That's how I feel about that.
Yep.
All of the gags are just kind of the like Jeff Foxworthy level observations. And then the horror is not horroring enough and the humor is not humoring enough and just nothing is going on.
Tops the turf.
Okay.
So Clown in a Cornfield, 352 pages, and is book one of three.
Jesus Christ almighty.
So
they
must
have done full like Beautiful Creatures gutting of this thing.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Beautiful Creatures, my goodness.
If they made this cheap enough, it might have made enough. Maybe we'll get Friendo Lives, which is part two. So
Friendo Lives.
Yeah. Delicious. I was also mad they used Friendo because that's the walrus creature guy's thing in Saga, and I like that Friendo better. Goose.
How do you feel about Call It Friendo?
Wait, what?
From the No Country for Old Men.
Oh, yeah.
Call It Friendo.
You're right. You know what's funny with that one is that, like, that movie is remarkable and the performances of that are remarkable and it's a hell of a thing. But the first thought that comes to my mind, if anything No Country for Old Men comes up, is the bit from The Simpsons with Waverly Hills, where they rent an apartment in the other district so that the kids can go to Waverly Hills Elementary. But then there's the Anton Chigurh character who is like investigating people to make sure that they're actually living in the district. Mm. And so he's kind of on their case. And he does the thing where he confronts Homer and he's like, call it. And he's like, you mean friendo? Like, you are not my friendo. And he flips the coin and Homer goes, heads, tails, on its side. And the coin goes, boing, 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 and then lands on its side. Like, and he goes, you got lucky. So that's what I think of when I think of old No Country for Old Men, for fuck's sake. Cormac McCarthy, my favorite writers. It's like, that's what I think of, is The Simpsons. I don't know. I mean, like, everything that's been said is correct, but I still had a lot of fun. I don't know. I can't really explain it in any meaningful, decent way. It's like, I just had fun with it.
Best option. Like, I wish I would have liked it.
I mean, there were certainly some choices that I feel like they could have got a little bit sharper with a few of the things, but I genuinely like the dynamic early on with the girl and, like, Dream Buddy guy. And I also liked how frustrated I felt, like, at early points where, like, Sheriff guy and teacher are just acting unreasonably, as just sort of, like, because ultimately they're sort of, like, weird sort of baby boomer cult. They've kind of got, like, where everything wrong is this generation's fault, no matter what logic or data will tell us. It's just their fault. And it's sort of like, and so then later on, as it kind of all comes together, I'm like, oh, okay, that makes it feel a lot more satisfying. I'm like, all right, I'll take it. I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things, like, I just had fun with it. It was dumb as a bag of hammers, but it was like, I had fun with it. And I really appreciated, ultimately, that it was like, it's this crazy culty thing, cult of baby boomer thing, versus like some supernatural nonsense that got brought back because, cotton candy melted in the ground and, something whatever. So, like, I really appreciated the fact that there's just a bunch of stupid baby boomers that are not going to take any blame for fucking up the earth. Like, I kind of appreciated that as being like the antagonist. So.
Yeah, I can agree with everything this movie is saying for the most part, except, like, it seems to have equal hate for both younger and older generations, and I'm not quite there for that. I still like some people. Some people are fine.
Yeah.
But I will say, my parting shot here is just that they end up having the, like, taciturn redneck kid and the dreamboat kid be a couple. And it kind of deftly covers that in some dialogue with them. And I thought, like, put in a decent amount of work into putting that in, like, building that into the story.
Yeah.
At the same time, it made me go, like, first I go, oh, that's nice. And then I went, that was calculatedly put in there so that I would go, oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's just an attempt, like, a further attempt to court me as a, like, a hip film goer and congratulate myself on how hip I am.
Right.
And it was a weird feeling just to feel like that felt kind of tossed in for bonus points.
It's the art influenced by algorithm effect, yeah. I think.
See, I'm usually the person that's
like, ooh, yes, absolutely. All these people and then definite, in infinite diversity and infinite combinations, fucking love it. But just this once, I think in a movie that was not hitting this that well with me, it was like, oh, you threw that in just to make sure I was on your side.
Mm-hmm.
But just the same, you threw that in knowing that that would put a bunch of people not on your side. So, who am I to judge?
Yeah, it's a tough one because, like, Colin and I have talked about this a lot. Like, where, like, he'll get bent out of shape because somebody will get mad about some kind of something. Usually, it's something racial where, like, they'll have, like, somebody cast in some role and then some segment of people will be mad about it. Some segment of people will be, like, good about it. And some segment of people will be like, well, you could have done more. And then comments, responses, or you could have done less.
Yeah.
Like, instead of, Asian character, who's not just, like, good at math, but, like, as a character, you could have just had it been like Janet Johansson. Like, it's like, yeah, that's true. unless they're like, yeah, go back 25, 30 years and watch almost anything. Especially like network television and be like, oh yeah, there was no Hispanic people anywhere. So it's one of those things where I don't think there's ever really getting a good answer to it. It's like, in the most cynical of ways, there are situations where you just kind of go like, oh man, I'm being fucked with. But the other parts of it, there's the less cynical parts of it, I always kind of go like, it's like, well, I'm glad that it's there versus the alternative. So like, okay.
And then yeah, also it's always better to have it there, but I think I decide at some point in my head whether I think it's cynically motivated or not when it pops up in movies. But yeah, either way, better to have it there.
Well, and especially if bigger guy, if kind of big dope had some run-in with the guys at the local tavern, and they're like, you know, like, oh, something about a faggot, this, that, whatever else, and then blah, 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 blah. Like, it becomes more of a plot point. Like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, like, wasn't that one Wish Upon where it's sort of like they have the Asian guy who's just like kind of a dumb, and he's just sort of like a guy. And I was like, it's a small thing, but I really appreciate it. It's like, which I know sounds absurd, that sounds insane, but it's like, okay. So I don't know. There's like, it's just such a moving, it's such a weird moving target, but it's like, I get what you're saying for sure, but it's like, it's tricky. It's a tricky one.
So, like, I have to remind myself that I really did enjoy the third act of this. Because I felt the first couple were real hard to get through, especially just like, I didn't like dad and daughter's vibe. It felt very familiar. And then dad just kept doing the weirdest bad parenting decisions. Like, if my kid got picked up by the police for standing near another kid who might have been involved in something, I'm telling my kid, fuck the police, and we're going down to talk to them together. Like, I'm not grounding kid. Like, so I found that frustrating. I had like none of those people I wanted to spend any more time with than I did. So but like having a bunch of clowns and then having the like Empire Strikes Back B plot of dad being a doctor having to try and save several of the clowns was fun. So on balance, like, yeah, I don't know. It's like a 7 out of 10. It's like Mr. Harrigan's phone. Like it ends up at bland from a different direction, but ends up there nonetheless.
Yeah. Like overall, not too keen on this. I think it's not like it's shoddily put together. I think the writing's weak, but it looks fine. They do some kind of fun stuff with the kills. So like it'll settle nicely onto Tubi one day or whatever. Right. But just kind of a disappointment where I felt like I was watching kind of lesser characters take a lot more time trying to address things that if I liked the characters, I would care more about. But I kind of quickly shunted them into the like Friday the 13th kids category thing of like, okay, we got our one gal and these other people around her clearly aren't given much of a personality, so we're just going to see them picked off. So like, then it just did feel talky after a while, but yeah, I don't know. I don't need to kick them while they're down. I'm assuming they're down. So I'll say it's like a 7 out of 10, death by, I guess this wasn't like a PTA, like it was in Hot Fuzz. What is that? Death by generation. That doesn't sound very good.
Lions Club.
Workshop it. Death by Lions Club. Yes. I like that. That's real good.
I said it and almost immediately felt guilty afterward. I'm like, oh. darn you face. I had fun with this. I just turned my brain entirely off, and I just sort of like just had fun with the thing, and I just like the broad strokes of generational sort of violence. The one thing I will say in its detraction is Eli Craig. Think about Tucker and Dale, and like even though Tucker and Dale gets a little frayed at the end, it's bold and has a rhythm to it. It has a pop to it. And like, so I think as a director, he's got that capacity. He's got that ability. He's got that ability to pop it. Like, it's just like, we're just going to go, just hits the funny bits and hits the other bits. And like, he's got that ability. And so it's like, somebody's got to give him some really like spontaneous level or Happy Death Day level material. because it's obvious as a director he's got a good flair for the pop of things, and so I just like you give him some meteor material for sure. So like I said, I'll be the high man on the totem pole, but not by a whole lot. So I'm gonna say 7.5 out of 10, 7.5 out of 10. Like, don't like, why fucking Jack in the Boxes, man? Like, they're just they're diabolical. Like, don't do it. Don't wind the thing. Don't do it. Like, don't do it. You see it? Leave it there. Don't touch the thing. Out of 10.
This has been a public service announcement from Will Ferrell and Elephant.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Just the bad, bad things. Bad things they are.
All right. Well, friendos, we'll call it, and we will talk about real quickly some things we want to watch next time. So for next time, we are going to watch The Ghoul, which is a 1933 production that's on Amazon Prime. We're going to watch Best Wishes to All, a fairly new one from Japan, I think. It's on AMC. And we're going to watch Venus, and that is available on Shudder. So The Ghoul in school. The Ghoul, Best Wishes to All, and Venus. And I've been Josh this entire time, and I'll say a flight.
We will have a short film to watch next week as well. It will be called Mr. Static, which I don't quite remember where I found it. I think it's on YouTube. Either way, it'll be on horrorshowhotdog.com. You can find that there. And yes, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie Don Austin pledging that I'm going to try not to giggle like a silly person when my adorable daughter says, she'll say the word girl, but she says, because kids say things kind of messed up. So she says ghoul. And I'm like, and I'm like, she's not talking about the 1933 movie. And so I'll try to keep my giggles to myself because I don't want to make her self-conscious about her funny speech. So other than that, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll talk towards you before you know it. All right, be good. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.